B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, 3 o'clock hour of Mike Missinelli Show is brought to you by Corpley's Bakery and Deli. World famous tomato pie and hoagie party trays. Everybody's good. This hour, we're going to hear from Dr. David Chow. Now, we're going to primarily be talking about Deshaun Jackson, this injury. Now, Dr. Chow, the last time we had him on, predicted that Deshaun was actually going to play against Dallas. So, he may have been a proponent of resting this. And his opinion was that he would come back and play, if you remember. Right, Tyrone?
He said he talked to the doctors, to his doctors. He had some insight, I think. He said.
So we'll see where he is now on this. Because there are a lot of people that there's no way in my mind that Deshaun Jackson can come back and help the team this year.
I agree. But there are people out there who think that there's a chance.
All right, we'll see if Dr. David Chow thinks so. Let's open the 3 o'clock hour with some alarming statistics that I've gleaned from a story by Tim McManus today at ESPN.com.
All right.
As far as the passing attack of the Eagles goes, the Eagles are second in the NFL in drops, and they are third in drop rate. Carson Wentz's weapons are 26th in receptions per target and 27th in yards after the catch per reception, while ranking second in fumbles and first in fumbles lost. Now, let me take this to another a whole different level. Nelson Aguilar, and you know he's making $9.4 million a year, ranks 87th in the league in receiving yards. That's, by the way, behind Miles Sanders as a running back. Alshon Jeffrey is 66th in receiving yards. Not only that, but Mac Hollins hasn't had a catch since September. So what's going to improve? You believe in fairy tales? There's nothing going to improve. Like J.J. Whitehair, Arfaga, Jordan Matthews going to improve the situation? No. So you got to really realistically look at what the Eagles are offensively. And what they are is now a run-centric team that occasionally has to get the ball to the tight end or Alshon Jeffrey intermediate routes. But they're not going to quick strike you. They're going to have to beat you with time of possession ball carrying. That takes a longer time to get in the end zone, and normally it doesn't produce as many points. Can they, I don't know, keep steady till the end of the year? Yeah. No muss, no fuss for me. 10-6 win a division. But it's not going to be that exciting.
No. And there's now theories going around as to why the Eagles' weapons are so bad. I think it's lack of a mix of injuries and lack of talent and bad talent evaluation by the general manager.
But That's a lot. That's a lot of factors.
Well, I think it's all three. I do. I think it's all three.
It is. Well, that spells out incompetence. But what that spells out.
But there are some people who think the Eagles are doing it on purpose.
On purpose?
That's what Max Kellerman said on ESPN. Guy gets paid a lot of millions of dollars, and he said that out loud today.
Oh, that's just a silly, hot TV take. Do we have that?
I have it.
All right. Let's play this Max Kellerman thing, because Stephen A. has to probably go nuts on this, right? All right, let's see what happened on First Take today.
Well, what I'm saying is, because the dudes you have are dropping.
No, stop right there.
And you know what? We don't care.
Stop right there. A lot of the reason they're dropping passes, and I've been on this since day one, Carson Wentz has to show that he can lead them.
That is ridiculous.
Stop.
No, stop right there.
What does that have to do with dropping passes? I let you speak.
You did, actually. You actually did it. Carson Wentz,
I've been on this since the beginning. There is an issue with his relationship with the receiver.
That has nothing to do with them dropping the ball.
Particularly Alshon Jeffrey, who suddenly has like the hiccups. Like suddenly, Alshon Jeffrey can't catch
Max
that.
Is the quarterback. Why is that? So Max is the quarterback. Right. I don't like Max. I don't get along with Max. So I drop something that hits me right here. I drop a pass that hits me right here. That's right. I believe it's affecting things.
I believe. I believe it's affecting things. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
I asked a direct question. Meg. You saying that because somebody don't like him, they're going to drop a pass that hits right in their hands?
It's not like, oh, I'm not going to catch this ball. The team is juiced.
That's nonsense.
All right, so I didn't actually hear him say that, but he's implying that the receivers are dropping balls on purpose because they don't like Carson Wentz. Is that what he just said?
Yeah, kind of.
Is that what the argument was?
Yes. Yeah.
And Stephen A. thinks it's ridiculous.
Listen, with all due respect, Max Kellerman can tell me the sun's out. I could see the sun out, and I still won't believe the sun's out. Right? So it's like he's one of those irrelevant guys to me. Whatever he says. So.
Yeah, it's just funny how, why is it so hard to believe that sometimes players get older? And sometimes NFL players, people get talent evaluation wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe Mac Hollins is just a special teams guy and isn't a receiver. He's a receiver in name room.
That had to be a contrived thing, man. That had to be a Skip Bayless contrived plot line.
No, no, no. Max has started that in the beginning of the year because he's a Foles guy. So now it's contrived in that what he's doing is he's taking evidence that doesn't necessarily reflect his point and making it reflect his point because he's pro Foles, anti Wentz. He decided that before the season started. So now he's saying, see, they're dropping passes. Yeah. And Stephen A's point is the receivers aren't very good. Max says, no, they really are good. It's just Carson's fault.
Why would an athlete make himself look bad and cost himself money to play out a personal thing that he doesn't like the quarterback? That at the end of the day, he's being evaluated on whether he can catch the ball or not for his own paycheck. What sense does that make to say something like that?
Aguilar is on a contract year. All these misplaying balls is costing him money.
Come on, dude.
And what would be the benefit of them dropping the ball? That's not going to make Carson look bad.
That's a silly hot take that some 17-year-old kid would have. Let's go, Matt Hazelton. Matt, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Matt.
Hey, Mike. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
What's up, Matt?
Show.
How you doing?
Hey. I'm doing okay. A little more alarmed after hearing those drop stats. It's kind of going to maybe back up what I have to ask you a little bit. So I have two concerns, and I've kind of been with Tyrone, and I've called a few times over the last few weeks, and been with Tyrone on my, you know, being not willing to believe they can win the division. And my and you've been very consistent in believing they will beat the Cowboys and get to 10-6 and win. And I respect that. And my concern is one on offense, one on defense. On offense, the way we have to play now, as we talked about, the smash mouth, you know, run the ball, which we can do well. You have to sustain long drives, and you need your receivers to catch the ball on those 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, you know, or your drive's over.
Yeah, well, they did that in the last drive against the
Bears. Right, they did. You're right. They did. But so I have concerns about that against the better teams and where you have to score more points, where they're not going to be able to score enough against the New England's, the Seattle, and against Dallas.
Well, it's a legitimate point, and I don't know what's going to happen in these games, but I can't rule out that they could win one of them.
Right. I agree.
And if they win one and they lose to Dallas, depending on the Cowboys' schedule, that may be enough to win one of these two that are coming up.
Right. So then also my concern on defense is it seems like, and I don't know, this is maybe just what I've seen, maybe like an eye test. It seems like Jim Schwartz, since he's been here, that we've struggled against the good running quarterback. They can also throw. He can't just run. But the good running quarterback, like a Russell Wilson type.
Yeah.
Like a Dak Prescott type. And so my concern is, what if those are our two losses, is to Seattle and Dallas, where then we can't get a wild card because of all the conference losses, and then we lose the division because of...
Yeah, it would be common opponents, I think, is the tie break before it gets to the conference.
Okay, right? Okay.
So you'd have to go through that.
Okay, well, I'm going to be hopeful that you're right. I really hope that they can pull it out. I feel like they match up better against New England than they do against Seattle and Dallas.
There are a lot of people that think they can beat New England coming off a bye, but New England's coming off a bye, and they're also coming off a loss, which, you know, I'd rather play New England without them coming off
it's
a
concerning.
Loss. Yeah, so,
absolutely.
I mean, we'll see. These two games, they win one of them. It alleviates possibly the need for you to beat Dallas in the second game. And you can still win the division. 10-6. It's the quest for 10-6, no matter how you get there. Now, if you lose to Dallas, obviously Dallas finishes 10-6, you're going to lose. You're going to lose the division. And you're probably not going to get in the playoffs. So you just have to wait and see.
Do they play good enough defense to play this style, though? Because you might fall behind in games, and then how do you come back if you got a bad receivers?
I worry about this defense stopping somebody like Russell Wilson. Because good defense don't seem to stop him. And the Eagles are not they're not a great defense. They're just an okay defense. So, I don't know, but I guess they could beat the Patriots. Like, I can't rule them out that they're not going to beat the Patriots. It would be a little easier for me to believe if the Patriots were coming off a loss. Let's go Earl in Philly. Earl, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Earl.
Or coming up on, yeah. Guys?
Yes, go ahead.
All right, just a couple of things I want to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
All right, first thing I want to say is I think the Sixers are playing really good right now, even though they lost the other night. And it all depends on how you're looking at everything. Now, the only thing I would really take away from that, the loss, and really talk about is the fact that Ben Simmons only had 6 points the other night.
Last night.
So, you know, Ben Simmons normally averaged between like 12, 15 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
So just those, the times that he didn't shoot the ball, I'm saying, or when he went to the hole and passed the ball out, I'm saying, them couple points right there would have at least tied the game up. So my whole thing with that is I think Ben Simmons just needs to be a little bit more aggressive. And everybody keeps saying he needs to shoot. I don't even really think he needs to shoot right now. As long as he goes to the hole and commit the fouls, because if you look at go back to the first game, he had, I believe, at least like seven.
Yeah, but there's a different defense played on him last night. That's the kind of defense where he exactly needs to shoot.
Because
they're walling him off.
But if he's being more aggressive and going to the hole, the points are still going to be there.
Yeah, but you're missing a point. When they wall him off, he quits. He quits on the play. He's not going to continue to be aggressive to get the ball to the basket. That was the defense that Boston employed on him in the playoffs. So that's why the medium range jump shot is imperative. When teams are going to play him like that, and Monty Williams is no dummy. He coached here. He knows what his weaknesses are, right? So daring him. Okay, we're going to take away that drive to the lane where you got past everybody in the first five games of this year. So I dare you to shoot a medium range jump shot. He didn't do it.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
He had eight shots last night, and none of them were like really good.
And that's my thing though. It's the times where he was a little bit more aggressive certain times. I'm not saying that he had to like take a whole bunch of shots.
You're right. But what I'm saying is that defense takes away his aggressiveness because it plays with his brain. He stops being aggressive.
Mike, no, I understand. I totally understand what you're saying. I'm not disputing anything like that. I'm just saying, if you look back at the game, it was a couple plays where he could have went to the hole and made a play.
Yeah, I got you. But again, to loosen up his game, this is what we talked about. We talked about this until we're like, our face is red and ready to beat red and ready to explode. When teams are going to wall him off, his mindset is, uh-oh. Now, to defeat that, you got to loosen up your offensive game. That's what the whole point is about him shooting, coming back to shoot the ball. It's not like for aesthetic reasons that I want him to shoot the ball. I want him to shoot the ball because it makes him more effective. And you can't play him a certain way. If he's going to shoot a 12-footer, you can't play him that way. Tony, Williamstown, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tony. Tony?
Hey, I'm here.
What's up,
Mike? How you doing? Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, pal.
I really been wanting to talk to you about Ben Simmons since they drafted him. But I'll start with this. The Sixers play one way really good when they run the ball. And like you just said, as soon as these teams put a wall up against them, that defeats him. And last year they played in the playoffs 5-4. He refuses to work on his game to the point that to make a shot. I'm not saying he has to be a great shooter. Make a shot. And I'm telling you, he'll get away with it in the regular season, but you know the playoffs is a totally different game.
Well, that's the biggest fear, and that's why I'm not reacting after this few amount of games. Like I need a chunk of this season to see more. Like I can't write him off now because, listen, we have a tendency to forget about all his great games. And he's had a lot of great games. We let one game influence our opinion of the whole that is Ben Simmons. And that's not right either.
Mike, I'm not basing my thing on one game. I'm basing on since he's been here.
I get it. Yeah. Last night made you think back to when they played him a certain way in the playoffs, and the only thing they could try to get out of him was post him up at the four. They took the ball out of his hands there for a great deal of the playoffs because of what you're saying. I know what you're talking about.
I didn't even watch the game last night. I took off my Sixers stuff because it doesn't matter. The playoffs is the only thing that matters.
Come on, man. How could you not watch the game?
You're
waiting for the playoffs? You're going to blow off the whole season of entertainment? They were 5-0 going into last night's game. You weren't intrigued to watch
them? They're not entertaining.
Come on, dude. You get the Ziggy. Come on. They're not entertaining because of him. He had five really good games, and a couple of them he was dynamic. Dude, I don't watch the game because of him. It's silly. Don't let one game influence you. Catfish in Jersey. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Catfish.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
What's going on, Cat?
Hey, I think the Eagles could get to 10-6, but to beat New England after they just lost, they're going to come back with fire. And the other thing is Seattle. Do you think that if you had a spy on Russell Wilson, that would help?
No, because if you spy him, he finds guys.
Yeah.
That are open, and where that spy could be in coverage. You can't spy him. The guy's a player. He makes plays.
Oh, he is. He is a player.
Yeah, with this defense, you can afford to throw a guy out of a coverage and spy him?
That's
like a death sentence.
Well, I watched the game last night with the Cowboys and the Giants, and I was hoping the Giants would win, but I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Dallas just got too many weapons.
Yeah, against a bad team they do.
You know?
Yeah, that team they played last night was pretty bad. So I'm going to get all excited about how good Dallas is.
That's true, but they one thing they do have the Eagles don't have is a deep threat.
Yeah, he's a good player, Cooper.
Yeah.
No question. They have better receivers than the Eagles. I will grant you that. Now think about this, Catfish. Belichick, like, he looks at the Eagles and he goes, all right, how can they hurt us? They can hurt us two ways. They can hurt us with the tight end. They can hurt us with a 12-yard pattern, Alshon Jeffrey. I tell you what, boys, how about we take that away? if there's ever a guy that takes away what your strengths are, it's that guy.
Yeah, and he can do it. That's the problem.
Yes.
Mike, I got a trivia question for you.
Yes, sir.
I know you know basketball. In March 1962, Will Chamberlain scored 100 points in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Name the four guys on the court with Chamberlain when he scored his 100th point.
I have no
idea. The other four players.
I have no idea, bro. Come on.
No idea?
No. No, I don't have any clue. You want to give them to me?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Guy Rogers.
Uh-huh.
Al Addles.
Uh-huh.
And here's the two kickers. Joe Rudnick and Tom Luckinbill.
Well, how about that? There you go. Tyrone, did you know that?
I didn't, because it was not really useful for me to know. It's just not. It's not useful
for me.
What
year was that?
62, I think you said. But the issue I have is I know people get mad at me and they get mad at you, but I talk about how these certain guys, they just do things that previous generations wouldn't do. Like that stupid video that goes around about how tough the 80s were because of how physical they played. I said, LeBron would kill these guys. Like these modern athletes because they're bigger and stronger than those 80s guys. You mean to tell me those last two guys he named, they could play in today's NBA?
Tom Luckinbill?
Yeah, come on.
Whoever it was?
Yeah, come on.
But no.
Right. That takes away from Will.
Takes away Will's 100?
No, it doesn't take away the 100. It's just this whole magical thing with Will. And I talk about like the stuff Embiid can do.
Yeah, nobody could actually play Will.
Right. Don't give me these guys.
Nobody could play Lou Alcindor in college.
Right. And the game caught up over.
Yeah, exactly.
Jabbar's long career.
There were guys that were so special that you couldn't play against them. But right now, everybody's special.
Oscar Robertson couldn't average a triple-double. You know how hard that would be in the flow?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
all right. Let me bring a snitching thing up. We're heading into a break, and maybe on the other side we can get some reaction to it. So I'm watching this investigate discovery murder mystery, and it's a family gets shot when they come home. So the mother, the brother, and the father gets shot. The mother and the brother die. It's kind of like a cold case. They don't know who did it. They don't have any clues or whatever. It turns out this guy surfaces who went to college with the younger brother. And the younger brother told him that he arranged the murder. Now, would you snitch that guy out?
Yeah.
All right, so there is a hole in your anti-snitch philosophy.
No.
There are conditions.
No.
The
snitching by definition is, if you do dirt, you do not tell on people you do dirt with. I'm a clean citizen. So is Natalie, so are you.
So technically, if somebody came to you, would you snitch at anybody in your family?
No.
You would not.
No.
So if you knew somebody in your family committed a murder, they told you, you would withhold that information from the authorities.
Like close family, not like distant cousin. Like, I'm not
right. A cousin, first cousin.
No, I'm not telling.
Second cousin.
Yeah, I'm telling.
All right, so second cousin.
Well, and I mean, it also
like, I'm not telling on my brother and sister. They know. I would not. I would not tell on my father.
You would not.
Absolutely.
You know,
not.
Your brother murdered a family.
I would not tell him.
You would not tell him.
I would not.
Natalie?
Maybe it's a character flaw. I'm not telling on my brother under any circumstances.
A family.
Wanted to see how far you went.
I'm not telling on my brother.
I don't like, you know, for the instance with like the Tim Donaghy stuff, the fact that he just sat there and listed names over and over again about like gambling crimes and stuff like that. I feel like that's petty. So just like, if you're going to be a snake like that, then you kind of deserve what you have coming to you.
But the murder snitch when it comes, is okay.
No.
You can't.
But that's not snitching if you weren't part of it. You're not really a snitch.
No, if I knew a family was killed and there's children and stuff like that involved.
And somebody told you, you would report it to the authorities.
I would have a moral.
Suppose it was your college roommate.
I feel like I would have a moral obligation.
College roommate.
If my college roommate killed somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sister.
My sister killed somebody?
Yeah, you're not telling. You're not.
Depends on who it is.
You know,
depends on who she kills.
She's not telling.
You know all the details.
And it's your sister. Blood sister.
I wouldn't seek out to tell.
Would you call the cops on your sister?
No.
If they questioned you, would you give it up?
I feel like I would have to.
I might have to start smoking at that point. I got to ask for the cigarette.
The snitch is a sliding scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, but by true definition,
because I get the impression you
no
snitch policy.
No.
All right,
no,
for
no,
instance,
no.
that 2-year-old who was killed.
Yes, I would absolutely no question
that,
about
like,
it.
When it comes to neighborhoods that are like perpetually like involved in these like horrific crimes where people are dying every day, that's when you have to step up and be like, okay, we need to save our community here.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like a crooked NBA ref selling people out down the river.
Or the Lufthansa heist, or a bank robbery.
That's why I want another level with the investigate.
But I could not tell on a sibling.
All right, so now we get to a break here. But here's the thing. The father lived. The son was responsible for trying to murder his entire family. The father lived. The guy was convicted, got the death penalty. The father fought for the kid.
What?
For him not to get the death penalty, and went through the all the proper channels, the appeal channels, and the Texas Board of Appeals or whatever, fought to get not to get the kid the death penalty.
Wow.
That's wild. See, no, if it was my...
I'm asking.
If it was my sister, what I would do in that situation is try and convince her to do the right thing and turn herself in. I'd be like, look, you know you're going to get caught. You need to do this. Because if they come to me... And I'm at jeopardy. You know what I mean? Now you're not only affecting another life, you're affecting my life too. Right. Like, do you want to take me down with you?
All right. So, supported the kid that was responsible for trying to wipe him out through the whole process. Did not turn on the son, even though the son wanted to slay his family. Could you have done that?
I don't believe in the death penalty. So, yeah.
No, forget that. Before you even get to the death penalty factor, the father supported him all through the legal process.
Yeah, that's son.
Yeah, but that's crazy. You try to kill me, you're done.
No. See,
you try to kill me, you're out.
That's a father who's not giving up on his son.
And he believed in forgiveness.
Yeah. Remember? So at the end of the day,
my father's not having that.
When that father has his last moment, he'll say, I did everything that I could to give my son a better life. That's how I look at it.
And that's what you would do.
He's loyal.
And that's what you would do.
If it were my kid?
Uh-huh.
Your kid's already watching.
And that's all that I have?
If you're in the situation, what would you do? Tyrone said he's out. How about you?
Try to kill me, you're out.
I would try and save his life. I wouldn't want him to die.
Would you support him through the legal process and say, no, it's okay, son, I know you tried to kill me, but I'm with you. I'm by your side. Would you do that?
It's tough. I mean, probably. For my kid, yes.
All right. Let's take a break. Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Let's get a Twitter poll update. Dr. David Chow will join us at 3:45. We'll get some medical opinions on the condition of one Deshaun Jackson. Twitter poll update brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons with Natalie Agonoff. Nat?
Thanks, Mike. We have how many votes? Over 1,400 votes on this one so far. What's more likely this year? 79% say Ben improves offensively. 21% say that there is a difference-making wide receiver on the Eagles.
21% say there's a difference-making wide receiver?
Yeah. No one's really feeling it.
But that's still
21% is a lot.
Out of 1,400.
It should be 0%.
That's people that hate Ben. It's got to be. But the Eagles did make room for a roster space today.
They did?
Now in the update, Natalie announced that they released Sendejo.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
And they waived him. So that would leave an open spot. So that the guess means probably Matthews.
I gotta give them credit. They do release players that mess up.
Yeah, they don't play their games.
They really don't.
They're
crowing about Sendejo. Oh, we love the way he hits. But that's that one penalty, that foolish penalty, got him zippied.
Yeah, I guess Maddox back though. Remember, they can play Maddox at corner and safety. So now,
all right.
So that means probably Jordan Matthews.
Nice
right?
knowing you, Andrew. Khalif in Upper Darby, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Khalif,
what's up, Mike?
How you doing, bud?
All right. I've been watching the NBA for a long, long time, and in the history of the NBA, I think there's only been two players that couldn't shoot. One, Dennis Rodman, and two, Ben Simmons. Couldn't shoot, didn't want to shoot because they couldn't shoot. Okay.
Reggie Evans. Remember him?
Well, I see Reggie Evans on 3-on-3, and he be shooting all kinds of stuff.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't shoot. He throws up two-footers. Come on.
Not on that three.
I watched the 3-on-3, too. He still didn't shoot it.
And I'm with the other guy a few calls back. I don't watch it. I can't watch the Sixers because when I see him come up, and like y'all say it's called the wall, I call it the guy, you know, they playing 2-3 feet away from him, and they clogging the pass lane, they clogging the lane to get the ball to Simmons.
But last night was the first time you saw it. Like, he had some really good games early this season. He got to the basket at will in the first game of the season. Did you watch that one against Boston?
Unorthodox offense I don't like. I like something steady that we can keep working on so that when the playoffs come, we got our
point. No, listen, man, I got you. All I'm saying is it's only one game. You can't overreact to one game and say it automatically translated to the playoffs.
It's 2-3 years. I've seen it. I don't know, I'm talking about this season. The logic of drafting somebody that can't shoot.
Dude, this season is only six games old, bro. Relax.
I don't understand that logic of drafting somebody that can't shoot. I don't understand the logic.
Yeah, but look what he does with the ball.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman was the best.
There's nobody else in the league that can do what he does with the with the ball.
But he's not the best at anything. You give him a little pump fake, and he's going to jump over your head.
You're overreacting six games in. Now, maybe we get to the playoffs and it happens. Guess what? Khalif, I'll make room for your call.
You can't win with a point guard that can't shoot. You can't do it. It's not logical.
This guy's a different point guard.
Okay, all right. All right, bye. I can't. I'm done.
You're done. You're done. They won the first five games of the year. You're done. Come on. You got to give it a chunk of the season to see if this is going to evolve. It was not his best game last night. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be like this the whole season and into the playoffs. You just got to have a little time. Believe me, I'll know it when it's not going to happen. It's not like we're not going to react to it. We're just in a holding pattern right now. Dave in Scranton. Dave, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Dave.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
What's going on, Dave?
Everybody, Tyrone and Natalie. A little bit about the Eagles' offense here. Like, they never do, like, a timing pattern where Carson throws the ball before the receiver breaks. And with them wide receivers not being able to get any distance, maybe on a third and three, third and five, that would work. But I never, ever see them do that. Just throw, release the ball and, you know, before, and then the right receiver break for it.
That's fair. I'm not so sure that these receivers are the great route runners that can get open for patterns like that. So, but, you know, you make sense with that.
You know what else I want to say about Ben, right? Like Ben Simmons, it seems like when he's in a good mood and wants to play and is happy, he plays good. And then he kind of gets in a dark mode where he just kind of mopes around the court and kind of gets in his own head and he don't play as good. When he's out there like hard charging and into the game and having fun, I think he's a lot better. It might be just the way he feels. Different days, he's just not right or something.
So you think it's like a moody situation? Where he feels like playing some days and some days he doesn't?
Yeah, like when he's motivated and hyped up and playing happy, he's a lot better than when he's like in his own head.
Yeah, I think what gets him in his own head is when they put up that defense that walls him off.
Yeah, and he just won't
mess him up. He's got to really defeat that mentally.
Yeah, I think that got a lot to do with it. Maybe a little sports psychiatrist.
Yeah, well, I recommended that last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea whether he's seen his psychologist.
Yeah, doing it.
All right, buddy.
Have a nice day.
You too. You too, Dave. Dave there up in Scranton. Little Scranton accent. I love those accents up there.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Uh-huh.
The mountain has been good to us on this show.
It has.
The mountain.
It is correct.
The mountain?
All right, so David Chow, the doctor, and he'll lay out this DeSean Jackson situation for us from what he knows of the case and, you know, the hope that maybe he can come back and whether they actually should have had the surgery early and would he have come back. All those answers we'll get after this, the Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, 3:47, Mike Missinelli Show. As we try to live through the Philadelphia Eagles' offensive woes at wide receiver, we thought it was going to be okay with the return of DeSean Jackson, and now he's headed for surgery, or actually had the surgery today. And there are a lot of people that think he can come back. I doubt it. But let's get the lowdown from the man who studies these kind of cases nationwide in the NFL, former sports orthopedist for the San Diego Chargers, and now still practicing and observing everything else, Dr. David Chow. Dr. Chow, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about Deshaun. And the last time we talked to you, they were headed to the Dallas game. And your opinion at the time was that he might be able to play against Dallas. And he didn't wind up not playing against Dallas, but they unwrapped him last week, and boom, and apparently the muscle tears off the bone. So what are we talking about? The injury we're talking about is called what exactly?
Well, we've been saying it even before the Dallas game when we chatted, a core muscle injury. Another word for it is a variation of a sports hernia or athletic pubalgia, where it's somewhere between where the groin muscle and the abdominal muscle meets at the pubic bone. And that's what is injured in these cases. And it's hard for a speed guy like this to play with it. And I'll give it to him. He tried, but honestly, and hindsight is always 20/20, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that Deshaun Jackson did something wrong. I'm not suggesting that the Eagles medical staff did anything wrong. But obviously, as you look back on it, I think everyone in Philadelphia wishes, well, why didn't we just have the surgery earlier? But hindsight's 20/20, and it's a hard thing for this type of athlete to play through. Kudos to him that he tried, but sometimes surgery is not the most conservative thing in terms of getting a player back.
Now, you were of the opinion that rest would enable him to play. How do you feel about it now? Had he gotten the surgery, do you believe he would have been able to play by this time?
Actually, I thought that all along, and I think a month ago I wrote an article that he's playing through something or trying to play through something that he's ultimately going to need surgery on. I thought surgery was always on the table, but it seemed very clear to me that Deshaun Jackson / the Eagles were targeting that Cowboys game to try and play through and give it a try. And if you look at my tweets and from the ProFootball.com website, even for this game on Sunday, I said, okay, this is what they're targeting, and this is their last chance. If you can't make this one, the surgery is going to come, and let's hope he can. And then obviously he played only a few plays in the first series, and even Monday when the head coach was saying it was all precautionary, he's fine, I was posting and tweeting saying, I'm not so sure. Even if he didn't make it worse, at some point, you know, you have to fold your hand, right? You can't keep putting more money into your poker, a bad poker hand.
All right, so let's go back. Because there are some reports that they recommended the surgery early on when it happened, after the first game of the year, and he elected not to have it. Now, I know I've read in ProFootball.com one of your articles that obviously surgery is ultimately up to the player. So, like, where, how is a situation like that usually handled?
Well, I can't speak for the Eagles, and I would assume they're doing something similarly. How I would have handled it as the team physician is, here's my recommendation, but more importantly, here is why my recommendation is what it is. And it might have gone something like this. Yes, indeed, I get it, Deshaun. You have never had surgery before, but this surgery is, you know, here are the chances of it helping you. This is how reliable it is or isn't. This would be the rehab and recovery. Of course, in a good case scenario, maybe in a couple of weeks with some rest and rehab, you can come back. But in a bad case scenario, this could linger all the way through. And the risks and benefits of surgery would be this. And surgery would have provided a little bit of a stopgap, right? I mean, now in retrospect, I'm not saying Deshaun Jackson's decision-making process was wrong in week two, but certainly if he would have known where he would be at in week 9/10, he probably wishes he would have done the surgery. The decision at the time was, I've never had surgery before. It's not a guaranteed to work out. I think I can get better with rehab. It's not that bad. But the problem is he's a speed and quickness guy. And those are the ones that are most affected by the core muscle injuries. And I probably would have explained that to him and then let him decide. That's all you can do. You can't force someone to have surgery. And no one has a crystal ball. Look, I think there's a part of your Eagles audience that if Deshaun Jackson, after a week one excellent outing, and word got out that he decided to have surgery, missed the next 6 weeks on something where there was a chance he could have gotten better with rehab, would have been screaming bloody murder. Why are you sitting him down? We need him. And why is he not toughing it out and playing through? So looking back at it, it's all the answer is always clear.
Yeah, so I'm getting the impression you would have maybe recommended surgery. And then when would you have told him that he would be guaranteed to come back from a surgery like this with the normal rehab and all that stuff?
Understand that I have not examined DeSean Jackson nor looked at his MRIs.
Right.
But reading the tea leaves from afar, yes, I thought early on that surgery was a good option. And as the weeks grew on, I started saying, even a month ago, that I felt it was inevitable to have it. And as far as the recovery, look, the surgeon that does this often says 4 to 6 weeks. That's not reality. 4 to 6 weeks to return to host a radio show? Yeah. 4 to 6 weeks to return to be an orthopedic surgeon? Absolutely. 4 to 6 weeks to get on a football field? Yes, I think that happens. But it's usually longer than that to be an elite wide receiver who relies on speed and quickness to get open. So I would take the over on the initial thoughts of 4 to 6 weeks, and a lot of national media has jumped on that. And now they're almost, I think, going a little bit too far with his season is done, period, end of story. I don't know that his season is done, period, end of story. Is it possible for a late season comeback and certainly a playoff comeback? I think yes. Is it guaranteed? No.
You're talking about right now, with the surgery right now, you think it's possible that he could come back?
But not
likely?
Well, I mean, the man is just having the surgery, right? And you got to see where it is. I mean, I would say that he could come back at 85 to 90% healthy in 6 to 8 weeks. So will he come back? I don't know, right? If the Eagles stay in it, it becomes more enticing, especially if they can get to the playoffs. And will the Eagles and or DeSean Jackson decide to play through and feel like he can help the team if he's 85 or 90% in 6 or 8 weeks?
All right,
I don't think he's going to be 100%.
Yeah, and that's not good. So the last question is this. Was there a chance that he could have missed the entire season even if he had the surgery early?
Well, certainly, because weird things can happen. Maybe they find something that's worse. Maybe, God forbid, there's an infection that could happen at the time of surgery. Maybe something doesn't go smooth or as anticipated. That is not the expectation, but that certainly is a possibility.
But barring that, the normal recovery of this injury, he would have been able to play, like, at the very least, week 10.
I would have said there would be a very high likelihood that he would have been playing week 10 if he had the surgery week 2.
Okay.
Not a guarantee, but a high likelihood. And this is kind of what I'm saying about the poker analogy. Sometimes you're better off folding your hand and playing the next round, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes surgery isn't the worst thing. You're looking at it saying, look, if there's a chance I can get better, maybe I should, you know, keep going here. And I get how players and teams and people can be fooled. So I'm not trying to be critical of DeSean Jackson or the Eagles at all in their decision-making process. I'm just sort of talking through the possibilities and so forth. But sometimes surgery is the more conservative thing to do because it gives you a stopgap, a stop loss of games. Whereas rehab, and if it doesn't get better, is open-ended in the number of games that you miss.
All right, Dr. Chow, thank you so much. It's Dr. David Chow, and it's profootballdoc.com on Twitter. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Chow. So there you go. So we're talking 6 to 8 weeks is normal recovery, 6 weeks probably, and he said 85 to 90. He didn't say 100 coming back from this injury now. So at the very most, you're talking about 8 weeks with him coming back 85 to 90%. The 8 weeks would be the first playoff game. All right.
In that scenario, you would play him at 85 to 90 because of what you have otherwise. In a perfect world, you'd hold him out, but they wouldn't be able to.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. 4 o'clock hour is ahead of us with your phone calls on the Mike Misnelli Show back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.